Good morning. I'd like to start by saying that I've been away for a couple of years because I've had a stroke. So sometimes I get my words mixed up. So you're going to have to deal with it because it's not my problem, it's yours. And it's interesting to hear the official line, because there are no elected councillors or MLAs in this room, which I think is scandalous. Even more scandalous, the Equality Commission isn't here either. So I think it's really important that you see where the level of civic society is and where we can give our leadership. I know the Centre for Human Rights for Disabled People, two of them, I think there's two, are here, and I'd just like to publicly congratulate them for the work they've done. Of course, it's funded by Atlantic Philanthropies, because nobody else would fund those kind of things. So we have to deal with the backlash of that, but I just wanted to say thank you very much, because I'm not talking about anything other than the individual. I'm talking about the individual whose life hasn't changed much since I've been a boy, lad. You see what I mean? Right. So you deal with it. Right. Give to every human being every human right that you claim yourself. That's sort of what I'm talking about. And I think it hasn't worked for disabled people yet. I'm also at this stage where I have to take my glasses off to read, okay? I've been a leader in the field of disability for over 30 years. That's a bit not an exaggeration. Before that, I was a teacher, and I found that children had no experience of people with disabilities in their schools, in their churches, in their community, because they weren't there. People with disabilities were isolated and segregated. For example, none of the children that I worked with could speak British Sign Language. The language, this lesson in learning the language in British Sign Language took about 15 minutes to learn, but nobody thought it was important enough to learn it. So I was very proud of the fact that every child I taught could use just the alphabet, just making sure that she made some recognition of how people who were deaf could use. This to me is a key and important message. People are ignorant in the proper sense of the word in what it means to be a person with a disability and to understand the isolation and segregation that we face. I feel this is important to help people to claim their rights, because two things: they have no history of claiming any rights, and they have no capacity to do it. And this ignorance, in spite of the centre and everything else that we're doing, this ignorance is still prevalent today. It's quite ironic. They were asking me about how I got into the voluntary sector. The first time I didn't, I failed miserably. It was a fiasco. But that was okay, because I got the second job. And the second job I got in 1980 was as the International Year of Disabled People's Development Officer. And what I did in that job was to talk to people all over Northern Ireland to prepare them for the International Year and to get themselves as disabled people, persons, to speak for themselves. And I think that's self-determination, and the work of people to speak for themselves is only a job half done. And that's why the rally cry of disabled organisations says nothing about us without us. And they still haven't got that point yet. By human rights, I mean that all the things that you expect of another human being, you expect of disabled people. That's not an exhaustive list, but the right to anti-poverty, the right to education, employment, healthcare, the right to information, the right to access, the right to transport, and all the things that make me a unique individual and a person who exists fully in our community. What that means to me, even in the 21st century, are that these things are not automatically given to people with disabilities. I've only got a few statistics because I don't say numbers very well, but one in five, as the minister said, one in five people have a disability in Northern Ireland, which is the highest rate of the UK. 3% of disabled people are born with a disability. And that was me. I was born with polio. 31% of people are over 55. So it's an ageing population. It's an ageing problem. And I think, you know, we have to find a way to get bits of the organisation and the sector to come together. You know, many of the problems we face are faced by people with disability or with age. 70% of people with disabilities live in poverty. 70%. And they're twice as likely to have no qualifications. They start in low-paid entry jobs, and they've greater levels of unemployment and even long-term unemployment, and they're twice as likely to earn less. That seems to me to be something that's not right. And that was what we're talking about. We're talking about things not right for people and things that we take for granted because we've always taken them for granted. We've always felt that we're second-class citizens, and we need to start dealing with that. And as people with disabilities themselves, we need to start saying that we know that we're not. We are proper citizens with proper rights, the same as you. For example, you know about transplants. Arguably, the greatest challenge faced by the transplant community is the disparity between the number of persons waiting for a solid organ transplant and the finite supply of donor organs. For renal transplants, the gap between supply and demand has risen annually. Maximising the benefit from this scarce resource raises difficult ethical questions. For most people on therapy, a successful transplant offers improved quality and quantity of life. But for the absolute gain in survival provided by a donated organ varies greatly depending on recipient factors such as age and illness. The philosophy on transplant is very simple. Equity, which is a fair opportunity for everyone in need to receive a transplant, and utility, which is the opposite, the optimum profit from each organ. They're very much competing. National allocation schemes and local policies regarding access of potential recipients and acceptance of organs are designed to balance these ethical principles in a standardised and socially acceptable manner. Disabled people don't get that or aren't allowed to get it. If you had to risk a transplant of a young person, 5 or 6 year old, and the transplant of a disabled person, I would think that we don't have the same right to respect and dignity as non-disabled people do. And I think people fudge that a bit, but that's where it is. For example, the first campaign I ever did targeted churches. It was in connection with Part R of the building regulations, because 30 years ago we were talking about tangible things. We're talking about transport and buses and all the rest of it. And this was my attempt at a joke, because I think that multi-strategies are good for people. So this was Nearer My God Today, and there was obviously not a church that we could identify. And that cartoon was very simple. It said, here's how we can't get in. And we got dogs abuse for doing that simple cartoon, but it was dogs abuse because people were feeling guilty. That was the only reason. Now, to be fair, churches have got better and their attitude has changed. And now churches do many things to include people with disabilities. But that's only 30 years ago, you know. Noel's was telling me about me being old, but that's in all of our lifetimes. In the 20th century, 21st century, a disabled person still can't get on a bus and go to the place they want, and when they want to come back, without checking the timetable to check if a bus is accessible. That too has gone and has got better, but it's not better enough. I think one of the more sinister freedoms is the lack of freedom to speak for themselves, especially in relation to home and care. Government policies don't allow for children to have, or for people to have, the choice about where they live, their houses, whether it's convenient to family life and friends, and not whether satisfied with the result or not. The big choice of how and why to speak about self-determination is always there for people with disabilities. In relation to family life, there are only a small number of social workers who know about family life, but their decisions affect all of us individually and collectively. There's only one example that I know where a person with a disability was successful in changing the authority of a social worker in relation to the person, the place they wanted to residence. It didn't really matter what other people said. They didn't have the authority or the power. In relation, disabled people have not received choice in relation to special education either. It was in 86, I think, the Special Education Act came past. And before that, children with learning disabilities didn't have a right to education. We were the last people in Europe to do this. They had a right to education in relation to health authorities, not in terms of education authorities. Finally, the issue of challenging behaviour needs to be talked about, because of many of the things that I've talked about, that is perhaps the right of people not to have special treatment The right of people to have special treatment. That's not right, but you know what I mean. For example, doors in residential homes in Northern Ireland at this point are still closed and locked, with staff deciding who can be locked in or out. That's happening in many places right at this moment. By the way, I don't know what time it is, because I took my phone off, so somebody have to tell me when they're ready to go, because you know me, I can talk forever.
Well, you can give us another couple of minutes.
Okay, that's fine, thank you. These examples I have given should clearly show that rights, dignity and humanity are still not perceived, or not perceived as being for people with disabilities. And I think that's no exaggeration. That's why it's important that Section 75 exists in Northern Ireland. It doesn't mean that we have to fully agree with these rights, especially when the rights might be unpopular, but we have to preserve the rights and allow the rights to happen. For example, it was highly political priority to talk about high numbers of people who were Catholic and unemployed. No one cared enough to say that the situation applied, in fact, was higher for Catholic males with disabilities, and we were ignored. That doesn't mean our rights were in competition. What it means is, at that point, politically, priorities were centred on Catholics and not on disabled people. Unfortunately, that's still the same. That's why I worry about things like consultation fatigue, because that's just an excuse to do it, to not do it, or to get the priorities to do it. Participative democracy, that was hard, is so important and worthwhile. But people in the voluntary sector and in civil society don't have the resources to do the work, but they do it. Nearly there.
Yep,
nearly there. I often ask, what right do I have to be an advocate of human rights for people with disabilities? Elected representation is just one form of democracy. Participative representation is another. That's real leadership. I'm sure that in my role as leader of the disabled community here, that if I hadn't been doing something right, then I wouldn't have a job. At least not 50 years of a job, or 30 years of a job. And although throughout all of my work, I've tried as a disabled person to represent others who are disabled. I have a better experience. I have a better way of knowing what a disabled person wants. It's still the same today with the convention. And for the first time in law, that's given the right to self-determination to people with disabilities. And we should not underestimate that. Attaining the right to speak for themselves, even though this may be an uncomfortable experience. For example, if people drool, or if they stammer, or if they don't get the words right. That's uncomfortable. But think how much it takes for that person to do that when they know the whole room knows that it's uncomfortable. It is particularly important in ways that their voices are heard, in ways in all sorts of areas and in all sorts of places. And if we even give one individual a better right and dignity in this conference has succeeded. It's absolutely fundamental, right, that when people speak, they are respected. That doesn't mean that they get everything they want. What it does mean is that the importance of their wishes are respected and heard, even though they are opposed to the usual view. Because we talk about the usual view because it's not ours. And I think having ownership of something is also very important. This is what self-determination means, and the things that doesn't really happen with people with disabilities in Northern Ireland. No, don't need that. What we need to change, it's quite simple. This conference has an agenda, and what I have to say is very simple, but it's very important. We need more education and training on what human rights actually mean, because it's involved in all sorts of, what did George say, the complex society in which we live. And sometimes the humanity is forgotten. And the awkward stuff that human rights is about basic humanity and dignity. It doesn't get any lower than that. We need to look back and remember that nothing much has changed in the last 30 years that I've been in the disability sector. But more importantly for the sector, we shouldn't have medical people doing things for people who need a social model of disability. That social model is simple. It's not my fault, it's your fault. I refuse to take the blame for what you think and do as a member of society. There's lots about leadership. Nearly said that, but look, it's gone. Look, it's gone.
You're pushing it.
That's okay. Listen, thank you very much. I really enjoyed speaking to you. This is the first time I have spoken publicly for three. Told you it was bad with numbers. 2 years.
Wow.
And it took a lot of courage, but I did it.
Hey.
So there you are.